Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. I've got Mark Immelman here. My name is Kyle Porter. We've been kind of switching up roles, Mark. We've had Rick and Greg in here hosting, which has been a lot of fun. But it's just you and me today. First off, we were talking about this before we started, but who you got in the national championship tonight?
Well, Kyle, it's good to be back with you. I like residing on your wing, and with you at the helm, I'm feeling very calm, very confident, and looking forward to the national championship game tonight. And you know what? I live down in the Southeastern Conference, and so I'm sort of, you know, deep down pulling for LSU to do the trick. I mean, they've been so good the entire year. They've knocked away all comers, and the story with, you know, their assistant coach losing his daughter there right before the first playoff game was moving. So I hope they slip it through this evening and get the title for the folks down there in Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, regardless of who wins, it's going to be pretty insane playing in New Orleans, LSU. I mean, I don't pay a ton of money to go to sporting events these days, but I would pay money to go to that one, I think.
Yeah, you know, and the one thing about the Clemson fans, I'm intimately aware of them because we have good friends, and my younger brother is a Clemson fan. Figure that one out. Anyways, they travel, so I'm keen to see what the makeup of the fans down there in New Orleans are, but I'm certain that the Cajun crowd will show up en masse.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's get to this week's event. We've got a couple events, actually. We've got Abu Dhabi going on the European tour. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But first up, we've got the American Express this week, and Phil Mickelson has kind of transitioned from being – I was reading about this today. He's transitioned from being an ambassador for this event to kind of being the host, in the same way that, you know, Jack Nicklaus hosts the Memorial, and Arnold Palmer used to host the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and Tiger is now hosting the Genesis Invitational. What's your thoughts on that sort of transition in his career? Does that make sense to you? Does it feel like the timing is right for that? What's your sense on all that?
I feel like it makes sense. You know, Phil has become an elder statesman on tour, even though the golf swing would tell you that he's evergreen. And obviously the high octane quality of the calf muscles that he's got no problem showing off social media. So he's young at heart, but he's an elder statesman. So I think, you know, hosting an event that was, you know, I still call it the Bob Hope, honestly. So it's got an element of the California glitterati to it. It's just down the road from Los Angeles. It's a hop, skip, and a jump over the mountains to San Diego, where Phil lives, and he loves the place, and he's played well there. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. I believe his management company, they're the agency that sort of organized the event. So I think it's good. He was the unofficial host for the last couple of years anyway. And
yeah.
Finally of the place. So I think the time is right, but I certainly, Kyle, don't think that, you know, Phil's packing it in. I feel like he's coming out to play, and he's got a real point to prove this year as he commences his 2020 season.
Well, yeah, and going into the final round last year, he led by two over Adam Long, ended up losing on the final hole in one of the more dramatic tournaments of kind of the early spring last year. So that was a fun ending. But yeah, to that point, like, he played well here last year. He's won here twice before. I don't think he's showing up to, you know, just glad hand and be there for the Sunday, the trophy ceremony on Sunday. Now, I wanted to talk real quick with you, Mark, about, so part of this tournament is obviously held at, the stadium course, including the final round. It's the Pete Dye design. We haven't talked about Dye on here since, he passed away at the end of last week. Just what was your, I don't know. I don't know if you had any interaction with him or just kind of stories that you've heard, interaction with his courses over the year. What's going to be kind of the legacy of him that you remember?
Well, I never got to meet him, but the courses, you know, when I was back playing in the day, the courses were just so visually intimidating. And to be honest with you, I was never really a fan. But then now that I've grown up and now that I've got to call the Players' Championship, for argument's sakes, I see the nuance behind the course. I see how he challenges you visually and emotionally. But if you step up to the plate and you hit the shot and you take on a penalty area, for argument's sakes, you get yourself the best line into the target. And all the courses, in as much as what they're going to whip you emotionally and mentally, they're very, very fair. And when there's a short par four, there'll be a peril and probably a real undulating green. And if it's longer, you'll have some sort of a way you can sort of dodge some of the real big visual challenges and the deep bunkers and the rocks around, the water hazards and stuff. Me personally, my first brush with a dye course was at this very stadium course, like in the early 90s. And I was out there as a caddy for a guy who was in the final stage. And I'll never forget the funniest story, and it's typically David Fairty. We were on the range and was after the practice round, and back then the ball didn't go so far, and you had the Santa Ana winds blowing, so this place was unplayable. And par was a fantastic score. In fact, Jesper Parnevik shot a 63 in the first day, and it was like unheard of. He shot 79 in the second day and still earned his card. That's how hard
That's the Rory. That's the Rory, yeah. From St. Andrews.
But I remember being on the range and we were chatting about the course and about Alcatraz and these deep bunkers like on 16. And Dave Fairty pipes up. He's just one down from us and he goes, "This place, I just imagine that I'm driving it through someone's butt cheeks because there's hills on either sides of the fairway." And you're right up the butt crack over here. And the way he described it was typically Fairty, and it was hilarious. And it sort of speaks to what the golf course is, but the place there, the dye course, is, it's majestic. The weather's always good. And nowadays, sadly, with the ball going so far and modern equipment, they've sort of taken some of the fangs out of it. But still, when the wind blows at a dire course, you can get yourself into a little bit of problems if you're not striking the ball well.
Yeah, for sure. And we see that at Sawgrass every year at the Players' Championship. I think the thing that struck me about Pete Dye is I was kind of reading up. I didn't know him. I'm not super into like golf course architecture or anything like that. But the thing that struck me is he seemed very unafraid of what pro golfers thought about him and his work. And that seems like a small thing. You're like, yeah, of course, like he's not competing against them. But I think there's such a desire to be adored or loved in the game today. And some of that's good. Like some of that's natural. I think you can still be competitive, but I love that he kind of went at players and challenged them. And sometimes I think he took it too far with some of his courses. You know, maybe with this one, I know there was a lot of kind of outrage when it first opened. Sean Martin did a really good story on that a couple years ago. But I love that he was kind of fearless whenever it came to challenging pros to play their very best golf. And I don't know that we get that as much nowadays as we used to.
Well, not really. And if you think of golf architecture, and I'm not so architectural buff, but as an instructor, I do pay attention because they will pose you questions. And if you dig into the designer and you get into his mind or her mind, you'll figure out how to play the place and what areas of the game you have to work on. And the one thing about Dye, I would sort of call him the Picasso of golf architects, where, you know, it didn't look right when it came out the first time, and it was punitive and severe and bordering on unfair at times. But if you really looked at it deep down, there was real beauty in the unusual. And now you look at, I mean, it's probably one of the most recognizable holes in the game, the 17th at Sawgrass, the stadium course. So now I think even more so people will appreciate Dye for that very point that you make.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's get to some of the notables in the field this week. It's actually a pretty good field. You know, I think some of these pre-Tory tournaments, the fields are a little up and down. Tournament champions is usually good, But this week we got Phil, obviously, he's the host. We got Matthew Wolf in the field. We've got Paul Casey. Ricky Fowler, I don't remember him playing this tournament. I don't know.
Played once.
I think. Yeah, I think it's his first time in like 6 years. So he doesn't play it very often. And then we got Tony Finau, Francesco Molinari, your guy Ben On, my guy Sung J.M., and last year's champ, Adam Long. So a pretty strong field. Who out of that group is the most intriguing to you in terms of what they do this week?
Well, I've got my eye on Finau. I watched him play for the first time at this very event way back in the day, and I'll never forget meeting the guy, and he was just so unassuming and so friendly and such big hands, and I watched him hit, and I was like, whoa. He's coming in off of fifth place at the Hong Kong Open, so there's a little bit of form on the go there. You know, Ricky Fowler is always going to draw the attention, as would Phil Mickelson. But I got my eye on Arn, and I've got my eye on Cam Davis. Cameron Davis, the young Australian, played last week. He's a champion in waiting to me, and so I've got my eye on him. Personally, I was somewhat disappointed from a one-and-done point of view not to see Adam Hadwin in the field, because this golf course and this place has treated him so right. He's had like three runners up, but now with the birth of the baby, he and Jessica have welcomed into the world, he's pulled out. So it's a good field. I think there's many storylines. I'd like to see Arn play well, but I think a bit of a dark horse is to pay attention to is Taylor Gooch. Played golf at Oklahoma State. He's one of your boys down there.
He is.
He's a heck of a ball striker. And all of those courses there, especially the stadium course, ask you to strike your irons well and be really tight with trajectory and distance control. And that's right in his wheelhouse. And he can play in the wind. So if the Santa Ana's kick up, he's your boy. So I know I haven't really answered your questions, but it promises to be a great event on three good golf courses.
Yeah, I agree. I think, out of that group, Molinari is somebody that intrigues me. You know, some of the key stats in this event are, strokes gained on approach shots and bogey avoidance. And those are areas where he thrives. You know, I know that people kind of jokingly call him the metronome because he's just back and forth. It's the same swing all the time. You know, I think he had a pretty disappointing 2019. Based on what he did in 18, he's leading the Masters. You're like, is he going to win two out of these three major championships? And then Tiger basically ended him, you know, on the second nine there at Augusta. And it feels like we haven't heard from him since. You know, he's been around, he's done a few things, but it would be cool to see him, jumpstart, not career, but kind of his season again after coming in kind of on a downer from 2019.
It would be it's a good spot for him, to your point. My interest with Molinari is it's his first start of the new year and hasn't played since the DP World Tour event there in Dubai. So he hasn't been competitive for a while, and I'm always a little leery of the athlete that hasn't been in the heat of competition. And if you're not completely there, even though the course is a little shorter than what it used to play now with modern equipment, if you're a little circumspect and you're not there emotionally and mentally on especially that stadium course, it'll get after you. It will.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other guy for me is Matthew Wolf. You know, this is a place where you got to score. He gets on some just heaters. Another Oklahoma State guy. We should just pick all one and done. We should only be able to pick Oklahoma State guys.
Well, look, I think I know where you're going in our one and done league. There, I'm sure Jacob was paying attention to this league. I like him around there. I actually have considered him in a big way, but if we're talking one and done, I'm saving him for down the track some. To be sure, those sorts of venues, that sort of a golf course, they're in those sorts of conditions where it's a bit of a birdie fest. That is right in either wheelhouse.
Yeah, for sure. So since 2012, when it flipped from being a five-round event to a four-round event, you got 24 under winning, 25, 28. Patrick Reed won it in 2014, 22, 25, 20, 22, 26. So if you're in the teens, if you're 18 under, no shot. You're not going to win the tournament. And
It's like playing golf in a dome when you're out there, unless the Santa Ana winds blow. So the green's perfect. You've got these beautifully framed holes because all the fairways are overseeded with rye and the moguls and such are dormant Bermuda grass. And so it just sits right in front of you. And if you're hitting the golf ball well and you're making your share of putts, it's open season because all of these guys can get to the par five. So you've got to get busy, man. 467s at least if you want to somehow have a shot in the, at the title.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw Phil talking about how there's no weather because it's like upright, like right up next to the mountains, which sounds like something he saw on like Discovery Channel, and he's just like repeating to the media or something. I would the breadth of topics that I would listen to Phil talk about with limited knowledge on is, it's innumerable. I don't think you could like come up with a topic that I wouldn't listen to him talk about.
He is the best, for my money, the best interviewer at the game. And at this very event a few seasons ago, I had him at La Quinta for the first round, for PGA Tour Live. And La Quinta, of the three, it's an old school design, beautiful old course, and it's tight and you've got to drive the ball pretty straight. And Phil just got out there with driver and just wailed away and shot like six under. And he drove the ball in the fairway a bunch. And so I didn't even ask him a question afterwards. I just pitched a statement at him because, you know, Phil's just going to go wherever he's going to go. So I said to him, wow, Phil, 66, man, you got that driver thing figured out. You know that you must be enjoying the swing adjustments because this was just when he and Andrew Getson hooked up. And yeah. To me, he goes, you know, Mark, I'm working on my downswing. I've got the swing more in play. And then he goes, and as you know, I don't drive the ball very accurately. But right now I feel I can drive it on a string and I can attack everywhere. And he just got so animated and went about talking about this thing. It's unreal how in many ways he's still so childlike at 49 years.
Yeah, somebody, I remember like something about that where he was like, I finally found the swing plane. And somebody was like, after 35 years of playing golf, Phil found the swing plane. He was like, it's unbelievable.
Well, you know, it reminds me of a joke I've heard where one golf instructor said to me, and this wasn't about Phil, so Phil, if you're listening, don't worry about it, where the guy goes, that individual over there, his swing has more planes than London Heathrow because it was all over the show. So Phil finally got it on plane, but it's a little off plane. In fact, the putter has been his problem since his win at Pebble Beach. So if he can figure that out, I think he'll still be relevant.
Yeah, I saw that he put out a video the other day where he was showing his TrackMan stuff, which is hilarious that Phil at 49 is like, you know, flexing with his TrackMan on Twitter. It's just like, it's unbelievable. But he was carrying it like 318 or something. Now he might have been like on top of like a 14,000 foot mountain in Colorado. I have no idea, but, his speed at that age, I think we sort of underrate how good his swing still is at that age.
Well, 180 mile an hour ball speed, that and above is elite on the PGA Tour. And I saw that tweet you were talking about, and I love the way he postscripted the tweet with, by the way, it's 51 degrees out, so when it's warmer, this thing's going to fly far.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, if you can move the ball at 180 plus, you're hitting it hard. And his swing speed was about, I think it was in just over the 120 or so, and that is gas, man. And so Phil, he's 49 years young, and I think he's relishing this, the new driver. Certainly he's got in the bag now, because you know he's always experimenting with something. And the speed, he's been in the gym, you can see that.
Yeah, for sure. One other note before we go to a break. Matthew Wolf, the way he started this year, he went T18 at the Shriners. He finished 74th at the CJ Cup. There was no cut. He was 11 over. That wasn't good. But then he goes T13 at the Zozo and T11 at the Tournament of Champions. So he's been steadily improving as the season has gone on. I'm really intrigued. You know, I think coming – I wrote about Colin Morikawa a little bit today. I think coming off of this Hawaii swing, you just – I feel like we're almost underrating what Hovland, Wolf, and Morikawa can be. You know, I think we're hesitant to be like, oh, it's top 20 guy, top 25 guy, because you're like, I don't know, we'll see. He's 21, he's 22. I think these guys are potential superstars. Like I think they could be top all three of them could be top 15, top 10 guys in the world at some point. And I'm really curious to see how all three of their seasons go this year.
Well, you know, superstar to me is more than just playing really good golf. And the thing about Wolf and Hovland to a certain extent, and certainly Morikawa, he's probably the most demure out of the three of them. They have that superstar quality about them. They're good looking. They're charming. They've got something special about them, like Wolf and his wolf pack and obviously the golf swing. And he's got a real swagger about him. So scores aside, I mean, he has got the makings of something real special. And it's almost someone who has become a good buddy of him and he respects highly. It's sort of to the Ricky Fowler ilk where Fowler has that it. You know, he hasn't won as much as what people think, but you go to an event, whether Ricky's winning or not, he's still going to grab the lion's share of the attention. And so Wolf has got some of that stuff, you know, just because of the swing and his build and he's good looking. He's got all of that. So he's got this golf thing figured out. Once he's seen all the golf courses on the tour, he'll be able to plan his schedule, go to places that he feels like fits his game. And then I think he's going to get some traction and it may be open season.
Who are you picking for one and done? Just tell me. I won't tell anybody else.
I'm actually leaning towards Arn right now. I've got to be honest with you.
You know, love him.
I do. And it's a ball striking place and that guy's a machine and he's played really soundly leading into this. He had a good President's Cup, but leading into that in the fall, he had a 6th and an 8th and a 14th. Now we don't know what happened over the festive season. Maybe he's, you know, but I'm sure he's been working hard and what I've seen on Twitter, that golf swing is as silky as ever. So, I feel like he may have a fun time of it in some good conditions there in the desert.
I might pick Finau. I really like him here.
I was thinking about him too, but there's one or two spots down the track that I like him.
And yeah. He's
the kind of guy now with the match play record he's proving he's a bit of a gun at match play. And, so I'm sort of eyeballing him maybe even for the match play, the Dell match play down there in Austin, Texas, which is, you know, you got to drive it well and it's windy and uneven. And so I'm earmarking him maybe for that one too.
You got the whole thing. You got the whole year played out. You have 2021 also or no?
No, but you, it's probably the only thing in my life that's organized is my one and done plan for the year. The rest of it is, used.
Okay, we're going to come back, talk a little Abu Dhabi Championship. But first, let's take a break and hear a word from our partners.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, Mark, we got some coffee golf. I love the kind of the Middle East swing on the European Tour, because for me, it sort of, I don't know, we've got all these opening days. We've got the actual opening day at the beginning of the fall. We've got Tournament of Champions, which is sort of opening day for the new year. And then we've got Torrey, where Tiger plays. That's opening day. But for me, I think of the Middle East swing, this Abu Dhabi, Dubai, you know, these tournaments over there, that to me is like, okay, we're entering into this kind of descent into the Masters. And there was that great stat a couple years ago where it was like two or three guys in a row that won the Dubai Desert Classic went on to win the Masters. It was like Willett, yeah, Sergio, and then somebody else almost did it to make it three in a row, which was wild. I think it was Rory. So anyway, we got the Abu Dhabi Championship this week. A lot of Americans playing. Brooks Koepka, Bryson, big baller Bryson is going over there. Patrick Cantlay, and then obviously your usual suspects on the European Tour: Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, Danny Willett, Louis Oosthuizen, and Lee Westwood. What to you about this tournament kind of sticks out?
Well, sorry to cut over you, but Victor Hovland is in the field as well, and this is the kind of place that I feel like he could really make hay. First thing that sticks out to me is, you know, just Dubai. I mean, that place is a miracle on earth. You know, you fly in there and you see these buildings that have been built out of nothing, and your mind boggles. And speaking of buildings, the clubhouse at this place, the first time I got to see it, I just stood there on the 18th green, absolutely in awe of this thing, because it's shaped, for folks who haven't seen it, like this big eagle, and it's sort of standing sentinel over the final green there with these big glass windows underneath the shape of the eagle, and it's majestic. And in fact, the trophy has the eagle on the top of it as well. So the clubhouse is unreal. The golf course is always pristine. It loves a ball striker, that place. I mean, that's why Tommy Fleetwood's had a bunch of success. I think Louis Oosthuizen's bringing some great form, and, you know, after a runner-up last week in South Africa. So it's just a good spot. It's a great time in the calendar. It's always good weather, really. Golf course is great. I mean, this is one of the great events on the tour, and if people want to sort of organize a trip to go and watch something, you know, going to the Emirates this time of the year is worthwhile, because there's great golf courses and some good golf.
Yeah, so your last five or so outcomes, last year you had Shane Lowry beating Richard Stearney by a stroke. You had, the year before that, Tommy Fleetwood beat Ross Fisher by two. Year before that, Fleetwood over DJ by one. Ricky Fowler beat Thomas Peters. Gary Stahl beat Rory by one, which was seems improbable looking back on. So you've had some really good, you know, this is a tournament Martin Keimer's won three times. You've had some really good kind of duels down the stretch, and it always seems like, you know, I think some of these tournaments we get to and you get kind of blowouts at the end, guys that win by four or five strokes. This is one, it always seems to come down to the final three holes, which as an event organizer, as a tour, that's kind of what you want, especially early on in the year like this.
Well, it's testament to the golf course. I mean, just to dive into it some more, it's 7,500 yards plus. It's a real beefy par 72. You've got to drive it well, because if you miss fairways, you're in some scrub sort of desert bush. And then you've got to hit your irons well. And the greens are always magnificent. And to those tight duels you talk of, every iconic golf course that hosts any sort of a big time event, it's very infrequent that you see blowouts. If you think of Augusta National, somehow that place always produces a story when it comes right down to it. The same thing with this golf course. And you think about many others where, like, you know, TPC Sawgrass, for argument's sake, to Pete Dye. There's always drama as it comes down the stretch and the closing stretch of holes here. It's a nice mix of holes and it really asks you to kind of sack up and hit some shots. And so I think a lot of that tightness of the thing is the golf course and the strength of the field.
Is that on your business card? Mark Illeman, swing instructor, sack up and hit some shots.
You know what? Now that you pointed out, I may have to add that to the fact that I'm a one and done junkie.
Only organize around one and done leagues and sack up and hit some shots. Okay. So the big news here is probably the number one player in the world, Brooks Koepka, back in action. He hasn't played since he withdrew from, I believe it was the second round of the CJ Cup. His agent, Blake Smith, recently came out with a statement where he said, Brooks's rehab for his knee has gone great the past 3 months. He's met all of his physical therapy goals. He feels as good as he ever has and is excited to tee it up next week. I have no reason not to believe that. You know, we saw Brooks injured a couple of years ago, right around this time after the Tournament of Champions. He was out through the Masters. And then he came back, and I believe that was the year he won the U.S. Open. He had a wrist injury that year. And, you know, so I don't think that somebody like, I don't think there's any like long-term concerns, but I am intrigued to see just, you know, what his form is, how engaged is he? That's always been, you know, part of the deal in non-majors. So what are you looking for from Koepka this week?
Well, I hate to sound like the name dropping sort, but I saw some footage on social media and his golf swing, granted it was only one angle I got to see, but it looked fluid. It didn't look like there was any hitch in his stride really. And when you're dealing with a knee injury, anything with joints is hard, because there's all that torque and load that's put on them, especially someone who's as big and strong as him with all that club head speed. But a few years ago, you talk of that wrist injury. I saw him on comeback down in New Orleans, and we caught up, and I was with him on the course, and I'm like, how's the wrist? He goes, no problem. And I was like, I sort of like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then he unloaded with driver, I mean like full speed, and there was no ill effect whatsoever. And then fast forward, I see him the next year there, and I'm like, wow, what a difference a year makes, because he'd picked off a few major championships. So he's the kind of guy, just because of his well-being and I think his mindset, he deals with injury pretty well, so I wouldn't be surprised at all if he plays well. The only thing is there's been a long time between starts, and that's always a concern. But to me, he looks fit from what I'm seeing. We'll obviously see when the gun goes off Thursday morning.
Yeah, I remember watching him. I was standing on four at Augusta, and the long par three, obviously, and he I think if you haven't seen him in person, like, try to get out there and do it, because his swing speed and the noise that his, not just the ball and the club make when they connect, but that his club makes through the air. I mean, you've been right there, Mark. It's almost unfathomable, like how fast it is through the zone.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's certain guys on the tour that will stop you. I don't care, even if you're a grizzled golf veteran and you've been around the block for a little while. And Brooks is one of those. He hits balls and you pay attention. Dustin Johnson's won, Rory has certainly won, Tiger has won. And when Brooks hits it, you know it's hit. And there's a sound about it that's almost Henrik Stenson-like. And he's imposing. He's strong. He sort of cuts quite a figure. So he's an impressive guy who's an impressive ball striker. And he's got this really casual self-belief about him now, and that makes him even more imposing.
Yeah, for sure. So he'll be a big storyline this week. Bryson, we haven't seen him since the President's Cup. He's been gaming on Twitch apparently since then. I don't know if you do Twitch, Mark. I don't. I've got too many kids to do Twitch, but he will be playing. He seems to play pretty well here. I remember he kind of started out. I think he played over here as an amateur at one point, maybe before the Masters. Maybe it was before the 16 Masters when Danny Willett beat Spieth. But he's played over here before. And then, I think the guy, whenever I think of this tournament and this stretch, the guy that I think of is Fleetwood. It just seems kind of tailor-made for what he does best, which is just ball strike the hell out of it. And I'm really excited to watch him in some early morning golf this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Tommy Fleetwood. I'm a fan of the man. I'm a fan of the swing. I'm a fan of the way he plays. I'm a fan of his story. I mean, I love a guy that stared big adversity in the face, and he did that. I mean, his game went from the highest of highs as an amateur to the lowest of lows as a young touring pro, and now he's one of the foremost golfers in the world, and that speaks to the mettle of the guy. So I'm a fan. I love to watch him play. I mean, you speak of ball strikers. There's him and there's Fleetwood and there's Hovland and Brooks is a striker and Cantlay is in the field too. So it's going to be all sorts of fun. The story I'm looking out for is the defending champion, Shane Lowry.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm keen to see if he's made the trip to Dubai with a claret jug. I'm certain he has, because and I'm keen to see if he's gotten over the 6-month party that he had after Port Rush and if he's come to play a little golf now and not be ceremonial about celebrating his Open Championship, very well-deserved Open Championship victory.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing would be Hovland's Ryder Cup campaign beginning this week in earnest. It's not like we've kind of been joking about it, and then you look up, you're like, this might be a real thing. It's going to be really interesting. I think he would have to qualify, because I don't think he'll be a pick. But he certainly could. He's got enough game to do it. And, Yeah, that part of it will be interesting. So, okay. Any parting thoughts, Mark, before we go?
Victor Hovland. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if that boy is on the Ryder Cup team end of this year. He's currently ranked 92nd in the world. A European team, you qualify by European points and world ranking points. I'm sure he and his people have planned on this because he'll be a fixture for a long time. And so if I was a betting man, I'd certainly put him on the lineup.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of, great, unbelievable segue there, Mark. We're going to have a DFS and betting preview later in the week with Rick Gaiman and Greg Ducharme. They will be back, I believe, on either Tuesday or Wednesday, kind of previewing the American Express with everything you need to set your lineup. So good stuff, Mark. Let's that is on Tuesday, by the way. Let's enjoy the national championship tonight. Go Tigers, no matter who you're rooting for. And we'll talk soon. Maybe Phil will reveal how much money he wins on tonight's game later on in the week.
I'm sure. Well, I'll be following your Twitter feed with great anticipation. So keep up the good work there.
See you, Mark.
Bye-bye, man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.